I apologize to interrupt this lively debate. May I ask, please take your seats. Thank you. Thank you for taking your seats. And may I invite those who want to keep talking to go behind me. There is a door. And then there's a big corridor outside. May I ask, please take your seats. We will start session immediately. Thank you. Let me greet the GNSO folks in our traditional meeting, GAC GNSO. This time we have drafted agenda with 3 points, but since we're running slightly late, I believe that we may address only two of them. And we will start with the question of liaison, GAC liaison to GNSO, and then DAG 3, and if time permits, accountability and transparency review team. I see that a number of GAC members have left their seats at the table, giving opportunity to GNSO representatives come to the table. Very good. And so let us start with the first agenda item.
Thank you, Yanis. For those of you who don't know me, I'm Chuck Gomes, the chair of the GNSO Council. And I was very disappointed I was unable to be with you in Nairobi. I was really looking forward to that. Stefan did a good job as vice chair, and Olga helping out as the other vice chair for the GNSO Council. So thank you for taking this time to meet with us today. We very much appreciate it. We always get a lot out of these sessions and hope you do as well. For the GNSO counselors that are here, I see several of you at the table where there are microphones. That's excellent, because I really don't want this to be a session where I'm the one that's communicating the GNSO positions, but rather other counselors can do so. If you're not at the table and want to join in the discussion, what we would ask is that you go to one of these mics to participate in the session. With regard to the first topic, as some of you know, several years ago we had a liaison from the GAC that was on the GNSO Council, and that ended. And so we would just like to spend just a few minutes raising that issue. Is there some way? We believe very sincerely that it's important that there be communication channels between the GAC and the GNSO on an ongoing basis. We don't have any magic answers as to what is the best way to do that. Maybe it's not via a liaison on the council. Maybe it's some other way. But we hope in coming months that we can continue a dialogue on that and see how best to do that. And so we would like to just hear a little bit from Yanis, from any of you that might want to talk on this, about how we might best have that, fulfill that liaison function, whether it's through a liaison or not, and keep the channels of communication open on an ongoing basis between the two organizations. So let me turn it over to Yanis and go from there.
Thank you, Chuck. Little bit of history and an explanation where GAC stands on this. you mentioned couple of years ago there was a GAC liaison to GNSO, and liaison ceased to participate in GNSO council meetings deliberately upon decision by the GAC to suspend participation until the say reflection which was launched at that time would come to conclusion whether that is useful and what role GAC liaison should play in supporting organizations or advisory committees where he or she is assigned to. This reflection is still ongoing and now has been moved to the joint GAC board working group, and we hope that we will be able to provide answers whether at the end of this meeting or soon after. But one of the main reasons, there were a number. One was that there was so huge workload, not only in the council but also in different working groups, that one liaison simply was not physically capable to follow all the meetings. Another reason, and that was maybe the most important one, that the whatever liaison said during those meetings was considered or perceived by the community members, by GNSO councilors and just GNSO council members, GNSO members, as a GAC position, and that was not true, and that created at that time number of cases where simply this was misleading information or information was misinterpreted. So at that time when we decided to suspend the activities of liaison, we increased the direct engagement with the different SOs and ACs, and as you know, every time, on every occasion, we're having this joint session, and the intent behind that was to provide the opportunity everybody to explain different options, different positions, different perspectives, and thus trying to avoid this misinterpretation that GAC liaison speaks on behalf of the GAC and speaks the position of the GAC, which sometimes whether is not yet established or is under construction. So, but I'm not saying that this was decision never again. So we may review that and then come back to the system, but simply we need to clarify that if there will be liaison, or if there are in fact observers in some of the GNSO working groups, these persons they do not speak on behalf of the GAC. They speak, they present government perspective, they present the perspective of their national governments, which is valuable, I believe, but this is not position of the GAC as such. I don't know whether my colleagues want to add something.
Thank you, Yiannis. While they're thinking about whether they want to say something, we fully respect that, and I think we understand that because we deal with a lot of the same issues, although we're not representing governments, and we recognize there are some unique issues there. But we do have a liaison from the ALAC that has been very active and deals with some of the same issues, although not via a government situation. And so he's sitting to my right over here. Alan, would you share a little bit about this from your point of view as a liaison?
Yeah, thank you. And I recognize I don't have to worry about whether my government thinks I'm representing them fairly or not. I've been on the GNSO as liaison for about 3.5 years now, and I don't think I have ever had a problem with being perceived as representing at large or the ALAC. There have certainly been cases where I've been asked, what does ALAC or at large think about it? On the very rare occasions that I can actually answer that, I do. Most of the time I'll say we haven't discussed it or we haven't adopted a formal position, but you know, this is what I think, and occasionally I'll say, I suspect if we ever went to a vote, this might be what happens. But I don't think there's ever really been a misunderstanding because of that, and I tried to establish the ground rules early, very early on, that I was speaking on my own behalf unless I explicitly said otherwise, and I don't think there's been any negative results because of that. So it's not quite an analogous situation, but certainly at this point the relationship is such that it seems to be working. And I will add that I think I do add something as the perspective from at large, even though I am not speaking on behalf of, and I think that's the kind of thing that Yanis was talking about now.
So thank you, Alan. That's very helpful. Suzanne, United States. Former liaison to GNSO Council.
Exactly. Thank you very much, Yanis, and thank you for raising the issue. As Yanis pointed out, there were certainly some impressions that were apparently developing at that time that caused us within the GAC to reconsider out of undue concern, but that is simply the job of government. We're each here to represent our own national perspective, and then when we come together and develop a joint position or a communique, then that reflects the views of the GAC. But there has been a tendency, or at least I felt there was at that point in time, to just say, well, we have a GAC person here, so we have a government view. And of course, the value of the GAC is that you have multiple governments around the table, and we think that the time and energy we put into trying to arrive at a consensus is that you are getting then a distillation of issues or concerns on or perspectives on a particular issue where we have a common view. And there's a lot more value to that than necessarily having a string of individual governments kind of wandering in and out of your processes and offering a single view. But I think it goes to, and as Yanis pointed out, this is currently on the table before the Joint GAC Board Working Group. Having drafted that text, I can sort of speak to that as well. We need to, I guess, ourselves understand what is the purpose and the function and the role of a liaison. So we need to arrive at a common understanding of what a liaison is meant to do, and do we need to have a GAC liaison to the GNSO, or do we need a GNSO liaison to the GAC? Or do we need neither of the above because we now meet often enough? Or do we need to revisit the way we meet? So it flags a, sort of a lot of different issues as to how do we want to structure the working relationship. So if it's just an information channel to help coordinate schedules or agenda items, well, that might be helpful. We're probably happy to revisit that. But if it's an opportunity to offer perspectives, I think most of us would agree that you would find greater value in meeting with us as a whole, as opposed to, you know, an interface with an individual GAC member. So I think there is just added value to the face-to-face as a group, if I could just throw that out. Thanks.
Thanks, Suzanne. Appreciate that very much. And I think it is the information flow role more than the other. Each of us except for the ALAC appointed representatives on the council, all represent particular bodies within the GNSO, and we often find ourselves in situations where we can't speak for our organization, and we try to be very careful about that when we're speaking personally or when we're just suggesting this is the way, in my case, the registries might position it, but I don't know. So we're comfortable with that, and we respect the fact that one government representative sometimes can't even represent their own government on a particular statement because they haven't tested it within their government organization. So it comes down to maybe the liaison on the council isn't the best way to do it, but we do believe that we need to work out some way for information to from governments to flow into the processes of the GNSO much earlier. Because, as you know, we spend countless months, sometimes years, on policy development efforts. And if after doing that, we get the feedback after we're done with our part, unfortunately, that doesn't make the process very efficiently. I don't have the solution to that, okay? But hopefully we can continue to dialogue and work towards solutions there. If there can be some value in terms of information flow, keep in mind that the GNSO Council is a policy management body, not a policy making body, and we're still evolving in that direction. So the ability to make sure that information is flowing to the GAC from us as well as vice versa is very important. And I can tell you that, you know, I've appreciated the interaction with Giannis to keep the communication flow going there, and certainly that is beneficial, and I don't want to minimize that as well.
Chuck, I think we should make distinction between two things. One thing is the technical information flow between GNSO and the GAC. So here I think it can be easily done through the staff liaisons. You have your staff liaison, we have our own staff liaison. So if that is just a pure technique, send an email from one to another, so this is very simple. The other question is if you want to have input on public policy issue, that's a completely different story. So their staff liaisons cannot help. So and then here is interaction. At least in past 3 years, we have been trying to develop as a matter of early engagement in public policy development. If we look at the IDN fast track, I think that is a very good example, and that may serve as a role model in general to cooperation between SOs and ACs in the future. So with the new GTLD process, maybe that is slightly more complicated. But again, the GAC provided input on new GTLDs during, yes. Not maybe at very early stage, but relatively early stage of the policy development. So I think we're going in that direction, I'm very happy to have this exchange, and that will certainly feed in our own reflection in the joint working group.
Thank you.
Thank you for that. So I think we can move to.
So, not seeing any other. Here we have one, Giannis back here.
Thank you. My name is Ravi Shankar. I am a member of the GAC representing India. While in this current meeting, we are talking about the engagement between GAC and GNSO. Often enough, the question of how public consultations take place, how public policy has evolved, and how ultimately it goes to make a decision at the ICANN board level becomes a discussion point. We ourselves have seen the fast-track process with regard to the ID and CCTLDs, and it has been one of the important learning experiences, if one can say so, from a personal level. Stemming from that particular facet, I would like to suggest, it's perhaps a little outside of the domain of this discussion, that most of us who are present here in this room are members of the GAC and represent the government. The GNSO is also an arm of the ICANN. Does the GNSO in turn have international consultation process outside of the conventional methods of inter-council discussions? The question being, do you go at large across the continents to have a public consultation process and you also are able to factor in from a non-governmental perspective, an academia, an industry, on or the stakeholder group on any public policy issue. Then you get the fullness of the viewpoint on a public policy issue across continents, across stakeholders. That goes to make the policy-making process within the GAC community, GAC and ICANN community much more participative and bottom-up. That's my personal viewpoint.
So thank you, Ravi, for your comment. I suggest that we move on now to the new GTLD program. We received, beginning of this month, the next version, 300 pages. We're trying to digest, but though it was the GAC who asked 15 working days before the meeting, but it is very challenging. We have had some preliminary exchange on the DAG 4. We received the briefing from the staff earlier today with Kurt's presentation, which clearly demonstrated that there have been progress on a number of issues, which was outlined during this discussion. For instance, on issues of protection of geographic names, on the quality or the scope of economic studies, which was mentioned as a very positive development. There has been advancement on protection of intellectual property and trademarks. But by saying that, it does not mean that all the issues are resolved. Some of them simply need further reflection until we reach full understanding of proposals. Some of them maybe need further thinking. And one of the issues which need further thinking from our point of view is the question of the morality and public order. We have had a specific conference call with the ICANN staff in April on this issue, and we identified that the current thinking and current proposal may have some difficulties of implementation. At the same time, we are still in the process of thinking what could be the best possible way of implementation or how the system may work in order to provide sufficient protection, but also which would be implementable. Certainly we are, and here I'm speaking on my personal behalf, we think that the provisions on protection of geographic names and particularly the acceptance of position of CCNSO, which was supported by the GAC on not putting country names in the first round of TLDs, is something which is a correct decision until the CC TLD process will be completed. Also, some progress is recorded on the involvement of governments in the framework of TLDs with geographic names. So we recognize that there is some positive developments in that. I'm not sure whether GAC members are completely satisfied with that, but certainly there is a registered progress in this on this question. So again, this is maybe to start to launch discussion. If you have some questions or remarks until now, but then we can do maybe tour the table and see whether there are some questions from councillor's side. I understand that this decision, particularly in protection of geographic names, may have maybe ruined some plans or postponed some plans rather than ruin, because it's not completely banned, it's just postponed until CCP, ID and PDP is completed. But anyway, we're open to any exchange and discussion.
Thank you, and I hope that the areas where you would like some more clarity, or to we can obviously speak for ICANN staff in terms of what they intended in terms of the guidebook details that have changed. But certainly, if there are areas where you would like to hear from some of the GNSO counselors in regard to where we're at or what our interpretation is of the guidelines, we're, by the way, in the same position as you. We've gone through the guidebook. I'm sure there's still things we have to learn about it. And we also think that there has been some good, very good progress, but there are also some areas where we think some more input will be helpful. And, of course, that's what the purpose of the comment period is for this particular applicant guidebook. So we're very similar, I think, in that regard. Pleased with the progress, but at the same time, think that some additional tweaks would be useful. Having said that, let's maybe go to, you mentioned morality and public order, and that's a topic that we specifically talked about, you and I, in exchanging emails and so forth before this meeting. Are there any questions that any GAC members have in that regard, with regard to different GNSO counselors? And by the way, we know you have people with different views on that. You have different laws within different countries. We're in the same boat in the GNSO. When we came up with the recommendations, there was a wide variety of views, and we tried to come up with a recommendation that best represented something that most could support. Now, we didn't say how to implement it. We threw that into staff's lap, which was a challenge. So certainly, if there are any questions with regard to morality and public order that you would like to hear different GNSO members, not necessarily representing the whole council, we would be happy to share those now.
Thank you, Chuck. So who will start asking questions about morality and public order? Suzanne, United States.
Well, thank you, and thank you for that opportunity. And I just had a sense, you know, here we were spending a moment on how liaisons could help us understand one another better, and I'm sure several of us around the table wish we could turn the clock back, and it might have been nice to have had a face-to-face so that as you develop this concept, as you say, you didn't take it as far as can it be implemented. That kind of an exchange could have been exceedingly helpful at that point in time, because I am guessing certainly my government and probably several around the table could have said, we're not entirely sure we know what you're proposing, because you've selected two terms that are found in a treaty dealing with trademark issues, and they provide the basis for an exemption. But somehow now these two terms are being used affirmatively to create a foundation for some decision-making by some three so-called legal experts. And at some point, somehow, you manage to trigger a process whereby ICANN is going to set a new international legal standard. This is where I have a lot of lawyers in Washington, D.C. scratching their heads saying, well, I don't think so. There is no such agreed international definition of these terms that whatever panel of three experts or however many ICANN plans to pay, they can never reach an agreement because there is no internationally agreed definition. So for us, trying to understand this and analyze, and I'm sure most of you will understand, you've had to write memos for your CEOs. You put yourself in a position of writing a briefing memo for your political boss to explain, well, here's this thing called MOPO. We now, just for you to know, we affectionately call this thing MOPO. Here's this morality and public order, MOPO. So here we have this thing, MOPO. Here's the origin, this lovely group of people who were charged with policy development, and they thought it might be an interesting concept. They left it to ICANN staff to implement, and now we have this proposed implementation plan, which, sir, my apologies, I cannot explain to you. So I'm not the only one, I think, who has run into this brick wall of not knowing how this is going to work and feeling fairly confident it will present legal challenges for every single one of us. So we have tried to see if it could be tweaked. Could you come up with an alternative? That is proving to be a very elusive challenge. But I would like to flag just one other thing that, again, had we known each other then the way we are exchanging now, we might have been able to overcome as well. In addition to not understanding how this thing could possibly work, you realize that this approach does not address an issue that the GAC actually flagged in its principles in 2007, which was to say, you know, watch out, there are going to be some terms that have national, cultural, linguistic, religious sensitivities. And we could talk about that now, but I don't think we have enough time. So, unfortunately, MOPO doesn't even address those issues. And I'll just give you one example that might come up from our perspective, is if it doesn't only go to the term, it goes to who would be the appropriate manager. So let me do .Navajo, just as an example. I'm not entirely sure the Navajo Nation, which is a formal official thing, would be entirely happy if... let's say somebody from some other part of the world decided they liked the word Navajo. MOPO wouldn't help anybody address that problem. So I guess, just to give you a flavor of some of the issues, and regrettably, when you were coming up with MOPO at that time, we may not have, well, we clearly didn't fully appreciate what the problems might be down the road. So I guess we can use that as a case study, a good argument for why we need to be talking with one another at the outset of a policy process. Thank you.
Thanks, Suzanne, for putting a plug in for more communication earlier. I appreciate that. It's easier to respond to your specific example than it is to MOPO itself. I like the term MOPO. Okay, I think. First time I've heard it. With regard to the Navajo Nation, we think, who knows whether we're right, but we think that we have a process for dealing with that, and that's with the opportunity for disputes from communities in that regard. So we'll see as it goes forward. And I don't want to imply, leave the impression either that when we were doing our policy, even though implementation was deferred to staff, we did try to consider implementability, okay? And we also tried to look to international standards that could be used, because we realize you go from jurisdiction to jurisdiction, it varies. Rights protection is a good example. What international standards are there? They're limited with regard to rights protection as far as international standards. There's lots of local laws and so forth. So we tried to tie those recommendations to international standards where they exist. That was harder with regard to the morality and public order, as you have well stated. I think we've covered we have some procedures for dealing with communities that might be impacted. That doesn't cover all your concerns, though, with regard to that. Fully aware of that. The challenge is huge. Is there anyone else from the GNSO Council would like to comment on this? Alan?
The two topics we have today are an interesting combination. Suzanne, in your earlier intervention, you said, should we look at a liaison or should we look at these joint meetings? And I think the point you've brought up this time shows they're two very different things. Things only come up in these meetings when they are of so much interest on both sides that we tend to put them on the agenda, an agenda which has one or two items. The benefit of a liaison, and there may be other mechanisms instead of a liaison, is to alert the other side that this is being discussed and it may be relevant. So a GAC liaison at the time might have said, whoa, I can't speak on behalf of my government or the GAC, but you're going into territory which may be really difficult to implement or things like that. And just to say, just to recognize that these are the hot spots which maybe we need to get involved in a more formal way and in both directions, I think, is the difference. How we solve this particular one several years after that fact, I don't have the answer to.
Mary.
Good afternoon. My name is Mary Wong, and I'm one of the counselors for the non-commercial stakeholder group. I'll try and keep my comments brief. First, on behalf of my stakeholder group, we'd like to thank the representative of the United States for stating very clearly and succinctly a number of the concerns that my stakeholder group has raised with respect to what we've called MAPO, but I suppose we could also call it MOPO, ever since draft whenever, way back, of the applicant guidebook. We do have, and in response to the representative from India, our stakeholder group does have many members, individual and organizational, from many different countries, developing as well as developed countries. And some of the problems that the representative from the United States pointed out has also been raised by our members with respect, for example, to the differences between national laws. Secondly, whether or not there could possibly even be agreement on what the standards might be, whether that's in terms of the application or the three-member expert panel, can they ever agree and decide, to a more broad question of whether ICANN, being ICANN, is actually the proper forum to be, in effect, trying questions of morality and public order. So on behalf of my stakeholder group and possibly on behalf of the council, I would say that we very much welcome the opportunity to work with individual members of the GAC as well as the GAC as a whole to try to discern what these problems, dig deeper, maybe think about the differences, perhaps, if possible, come up with some workable solution. There may be none, but I should hope on behalf of my stakeholder group that we can carry on this conversation immediately. Thank you.
Thank you. I have a query at this point of time that we are expanding the GTLD framework. While doing so, what is the thought process in respect of ID and GTLD? Is there any thought process in respect of ID and GTLD? Now, since the ID and CCTLDs have come into vogue, I'm sure that there would be equal demand for ID and GTLD. The other poser that I have is, in the GTLD framework, anyone could have bid it and take the registry activity. If we do enter the framework of an ID and GTLD, how would the registry management process be in place? Because that's a slightly tricky area. It's in my perspective that because working with the CCTLD, we have chosen in our country for the .in and the 22 Indian languages one single registry to handle all these aspects. So I do have this particular poser or query in my mind. I just thought I would put it before this house.
Thank you. And we tried in the new GTLD policy development process to you know design it in such a way that it applies to IDN GTLDs as well as those in the LDH characters. So the recommendations that the GNSO made were intended to apply to both. Now, with regard to specific implementation of IDN GTLDs, it's probably easier for me to speak from my perspective as a VeriSign employee, because we have a couple fairly well-known GTLDs, and we have customers in those that are that have wanted for a long time to have an IDN TLD in addition to their second level IDN GTLD. So that is a very, very important issue. In our particular case, what we're trying to do is to work with the governments of the particular regions where those may apply and make sure that we're in cooperation and working together in that regard. And I would suspect that other registries and potential new registries would probably be wise to do the same thing, and maybe they already are.
Okay. So any other questions?
My name is Naresh Ajwani. I serve various internet communities. I intend to pose this listening back to Suzanne by asking a question from the GAC chairman. The background is, every sovereign is responsible, rather more responsible for common man. I'm using the word common man because rich, poor varies from country to country. But common man is almost at a similar percentage of 70-80 in every country, irrespective of emerging economies or developed economies. My question to you is, what GAC is doing for common man in terms of access? And this question has got a relevance to liaising with GNSO, especially non-commercial stakeholder group.
If I understand correctly your question, then the answer is GAC is not in the business of increasing or creating possibilities for increased access to internet, if that was your question. So there are number of intergovernmental organizations who are working globally on this issue. There is a post-VISIS process. VISIS stands for World Summit on Information Society, where a number of intergovernmental organizations like ITU, International Telecommunications Organization, UNESCO, UNDP, working together to provide let's say framework for increased access, and certainly the main responsibility lies with the national governments, how they promote policies and how they interact with the private sector companies, who are the ones who really bring internet to different parts of the world. So I'm not sure that I understood your question correctly.
I feel that I have failed in posing my question better. I personally feel for our next and a next to next billion internet user, there are four impediments. And the first impediment is a cost of the access. Second one is a cost of the internet. Third is a language. Fourth is an education. All these four things have got a solution with every sovereign, with every government, in the form of a public internet kiosk. I personally feel if there is a liaising between GNSO and your community, there is a possibility of a growth of this particular segment which has been completely ignored till date. I have already applied rather a notice of intent has been already given to GNSO community to recognize public internet kiosk or cyber cafes. My request would be, Suzanne and you need to consider that this kind of licensing will really help the entire GAC community from a common man perspective.
Yeah, thank you for your comment.
Thank you.
Yeah, this is Edmund Chung from GNSO Council. If we're through with the comments on MOPO or MAPO, I have a separate item on DAG to bring up. Is that okay? Okay. It's regarding the geographic names. I think there is a there was significant adjustments in the DAG 4 version. I, however, sort of want to focus on one particular area, which is the continent or region name. I sort of singled that out, obviously, from my background from .Asia as well, but I observe that it is similar to the DAG 3 in that a sort of arbitrary percentage of governmental response or consent is being created in that in the DAG. I guess I want to point it out to the GAC that the registry stakeholder group did put forward an observation of this last round of the public comment period, in that the regions themselves are vastly different. And having a 60% in North America, for example, is very different from having a 60% in Asia or Africa in that sense. So in our sort of suggestion, we think that some consultation with the GAC and really taking it into consideration on a case-by-case basis might be a better way than trying to create a one-size-fit-all thing where it says 60% or 50% or whatever percentage is required. I sort of want to throw it out to the GAC to take note and take consideration, or maybe deliberate about it, and if any of the GAC members have any thoughts on it.
Thank you, Edmund. Anybody wants to react from the GAC? Maybe while people are thinking, Germany, Hubert.
Yes, thank you for this remark. It's surely worth considering. What I would be interested in, because I simply do not know the answer, we have in this case we have some experience, and especially .Asia is a prototype for this kind of regional top level domain, and maybe you could share with us the experience you had with your governments and what were the problems concerning that, because. Yes, it's difficult because we don't have, as far as I know, I don't see any initiatives. For example, in Europe, we have .eu now, and I don't see a .Europe, but maybe there is an initiative, and therefore it would be interesting to hear your opinion to that.
Yes, Edmund, please. In fact, yeah, I wanted to ask you, so you said... I agree that there is a difference between North America and Asia or Africa. But what's your recipe? What does it mean case-by-case basis? So do you have something specific in mind?
Sure. In fact, we sort of incorporated into the registry stakeholder group comments in the last round. I think, you know, I sort of take our experience as mentioned. It's sort of trying to pioneer this space, if you will, in that I think through our process from .Asia, we connected with through GAC with many of the governments in Asia, and through dialogue and through reaching out and getting a lot of response to to pretty much non-objecting or otherwise. But more importantly is the process, and also ultimately seeking some the board sought the sort of comments from GAC chair at that point at board meetings, as I understand, and that, you know, that was the informal process at that time. And I think that could be become a way to formalize it, such that in the cases of regional, because we're not talking about like capital cities where it's you know, hundreds or thousands of the cities, but capital not thousands, but city names in thousands range. We're talking about just few regions and probably 20, 30 subregions that is in that category. Perhaps we could take it on as such, where the process of which would be that you would go through a process to seek the response from governments, but ultimately also to work with GAC through the chair to seek a response through that as a formalized as a process, rather than create a one size fit all saying how many percent needs to respond or consent.
Thank you, Edmund. We'll think about it. And since we're almost at the end of the meeting, Bertrand, you are the last.
Thank you. I'd like to take the opportunity of this joint meeting to give a rapid update on a notion that has brought a lot of discussions between the GNSO and the GAC, which is the possibility of using some typology or categorization in the GTLD process. In a nutshell and very quickly, I just want to reiterate that this is a concern that the GAC has addressed and that has mentioned in various times in the previous communiques. It is something that is certainly not intended as producing new delays. And in addition, I would even argue that it is certainly not something or an effort that can be accused of having caused any delay until now, because this is not something that has been really discussed or integrated in the DAG formally today. However, as some of those of you, who were in Nairobi remember, there was an initiative that was taken at the end of the Nairobi meeting to informally gather people who were interested in exploring this notion and alleviate the misunderstandings that may have emerged under the name of a cross-community group. And this group actually had a meeting in Nairobi. There were about 35 people in the room. It was a very intense meeting after a whole week. And it led to a very informal mailing list on which, during the following months, very intense interactions have been conducted. When I say very intense, the arguments were as strong as they usually are in any new GTLD program discussion. Interestingly enough, a certain number of elements emerged, at least in the better common understanding of what was meant by categories or categorization. Unfortunately, because of the vertical integration activity, or PDP, that started at the end of that month, the whole activity has been basically sucked up into the vertical integration PDP, and so we didn't have the opportunity to work thoroughly afterwards. However, I have circulated on the list a sort of summary document, which is not, and I insist I want to be very transparent about that, which is not a product of the group. It is a product that has been made on the basis of the discussions that took place in the group, but it is not a globally endorsed document of the group. It is just food for thought. There has been a distribution in the GAC, and maybe there are some papers that circulate around. There's basically a two-page summary, of which I give you the highlights. And the key element that there are two key elements that came out, in my view, of the discussion. The first one is that most of the categories that people have in mind are actually already more or less identified in the DAG one way or the other. And so this is not about drafting completely new rules. It's about identifying what in the DAG currently is actually addressing different types of regimes in terms of either the rules applicable to the string, the rules applicable to the type of applicant, and the rules applicable to the operation of the TLD itself. In a nutshell, the main categories, so to speak, that have emerged are clearly things that are around geographic names, that are around community-related TLDs or strings. Whatever you call it, it can be brand TLD or single registrant TLD, as the discussion is going on in the vertical integration, whatever. These are typically proper nouns, as grammatical distinctions are considered. And in any language, there is a distinction between proper nouns and common words. The general idea and the general thrust that we saw emerging from the DAG is that a special attention was paid to proper nouns, one way or the other, because of trademark protection, because of geographic protection, because of community sensitivities, as was mentioned by Suzanne earlier. There is one type of string that has not been given a particular attention when it's a common word and not a proper noun, but that could deserve some specific attention. And these words are the words that are scarce. And the words that are scarce are short, meaningful words. Short, meaningful words are actually something that belong to a community of language. And one of the questions that can or should be addressed, and that we are discussing within the GAC, is whether there is some type of public interest dimension attached to who is the manager of a very generic term. I finish with this because we are running out of time, but the reason why I was raising this is for the following. There is no general agreement at the moment on the modalities, or even if there is a possibility to include this kind of distinction in the current DAG. But we would be certainly very interested in continuing the discussion with the GNSO and other members of the community, including ALAC and others, on how this could be done, or at least how this could be useful, for instance, in the context of the vertical integration discussion. But there is one thing I wanted to raise now for discussion during this week. In the DAG, there is something that is mentioned about batching applications. Once the application round is open, there will be a range of applicants. As Kurt says, it's 500 plus or minus 400. This is going to be batched in one way or another in order to deal with those applications. One idea that we would like to explore, suggest to explore, is what if during this batching a few piles were made and the 500 applications were being distributed on those piles to see whether there are similarities? Because it does make sense to have the same sub-team dealing with all the geographic terms, the same sub-team dealing basically with the brand, whatever the final DAG says, or the same sub-team dealing with the very common words, rather than grouping them by, for instance, the moment at which the application has been submitted. So this is just an idea, food for thought. And I would be very happy, and the GAC would be very happy, to get a feedback on how to evolve and continue to discuss this during this week, and maybe to have another informal meeting of those who are interested in this, and reactivate the so-called cross-community group on categorization. That's it. Thank you.
So thank you, Bertrand. I don't know whether there is wish to react on this. Switzerland, Thomas, but please briefly. We're already over time.
Thank you, Yanis. I will be sure just to add something on what Bertrand has said. 1.5 months ago in Madrid, there was the European Dialogue on Internet Governance, which is the European Internet Governance Forum. And apart from talking about cloud computing and net neutrality and other issues, there was one session on geographical and other new top-level domains of public interest. And Eurodic there were 300 physical participants and about 200 remote participants from all stakeholders all over Europe. And there were some kind of findings and agreements in that session, which, if you give me 1 minute, I would just like to give the most important items. So among the participants in that session, there was an agreement that the new TLDs present various opportunities and should be introduced as soon as possible once a viable process has been developed. That the DN space is a common global resource, that the final regime for new GTLDs must therefore be developed in a global public interest perspective in accordance to the AOC. Serving the public interest does not mean that TLDs have to be run as not-for-profit. Commercially run TLDs can also contribute to the public interest. The one-size-fits-all approach is one of the major reasons for the delay regarding the new GTLD program. This is because no single regime can be expected to reasonably cover TLDs as diverse as geographic TLDs, brand TLDs, linguistic community TLDs, and keyword TLDs. Different types of legal contracts are therefore necessary, but these potential regimes need to be kept simple and of a limited number to reduce incentives for gaming. Possible elements of regime differentiation could be, inter alia, the special conditions under which registries could use non-ICANN accredited registrars, especially local ones, and be bound by contracts under the local law related to the community they prefer to serve rather than by Californian law only. There is not only a public interest dimension to geo-CTL cultural linguistic TLDs, also short, meaningful keyword TLDs raise public interest issues, in particular as regards sectors where there is a potential consumer harm or fraud, such as TLDs linked to health, food, banking, and financial aid. And there is a number of proposals made to ICANN, which I will not go into detail. Now you find the whole messages of Eurodic on the website eurodic.org. Thank you.
Thank you, Thomas. Yes, yes, please. Stefan.
Thank you very much. Just wanted to ask a question about the categories thing, because I think one of the worries that we may have on the GNSO side is that it would introduce more delays at this stage. So how can we be reassured that it won't? We get the feeling that we're near completion of the process, and that introducing a new factor into the process at this time, which would be a policy-making aspect to the process, would introduce more delays, even if the idea itself is good.
Once again, I think the worry is perfectly legitimate. Let's be honest. This is absolutely natural that this question is raised. The elements of answers have not changed since basically a year and a half. Categories have been constantly not used, and delays have happened. As Thomas just said, the main discussion we had in Madrid actually led to the belief or the conviction by the participants that it is the attempt at finding one single regime that is introducing more delays. Because if you think about it, by definition, until you have solved every single problem for every single potential application that we may think of at this moment, the program cannot be launched. And so, as I said in the presentation, or the quick presentation, there is no proof that this is the solution, or even that it can be easily incorporated. But on a personal basis, I was incredibly encouraged, and I hope it is shared by the people who participate in Nairobi and in the meetings afterwards. I am extremely encouraged by the nature of the interaction that took place, because actually not only was a lot of information exchange that allowed everybody to understand that actually those categories are there. They are in the DAG. And actually, the document that was circulated on the list, and that could be, for instance, shared in a little bit more broadly in the GNSO, shows that we already have categories in ICANN, let it be only CCTLEs and GTLEs. It makes complete perfect sense as we move forward to have distinctions in the different GTLDs. And actually, even the economic study that was released about 2 days ago is indicating the interest of managing the growth in the release and to maybe do subcategories. It even goes as far, as I said in the previous session with Kurt, as hypothesizing that when a specific type of TLD has a huge public interest benefit or good externalities, ICANN could even go as far as sponsoring and financing, subsidizing the operation of this TLD. So I don't go as far as this, but it is very interesting to see that it is an element that brings flexibility into the approach. And once again, unless I'm contradicted by the people who participated in the group, in spite of the very intense discussion, this demonstrated in Nairobi that putting people in the room and discussing sincerely whether it helps or not, for instance, for vertical integration, for instance, for the importance of registry agreements, for the regime that will be put in place afterwards, this can make sense. And it would add absolutely no delay if we had enough time to discuss it just a little bit better in Brussels. So that's the only answer I can give at that time.
Thank you, Bertrand. I think that this gives us some food for thought and themes for informal interactions in the different bars of different hotels around the Congress Center. Where I believe we will be heading soon, right after the end of this session. So thank you very much indeed. For me, it was very useful exchange on a number of issues, including on liaisons. And I encourage continue this informal exchange in an informal way throughout the week. Thank you. Thank you.
And I also thank you for your time today. And just want to leave you with one thing to think about. We talked about the value of sessions, for example, on MOPO for happening earlier. What we have to think about, and I don't have the answers, is, you know, we're not going to do something like that in a 1-hour session like this 3 times a year. So how do we do that?